She musters a smile.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a brand new Hey Kids Comics movie. I am Andrew Farmer with me, as always, as producer, co-host, man of the hour, film critic extraordinaire, which I'm finding out, the Jedi, Cole Houston.
Indeed, and this one truly does change everything. We've said that before, but this time we mean it.
We keep saying that. We mean it. This time we really mean it. What's the title of this one?
It doesn't change everything for us, but we talk about where it changes everything for somebody else.
Everybody else.
Which is safer for us, but this is the end of the world. And what we're getting at here is literally the world-ending scenarios that the massive threats, your Galacticai
that happened weekly.
Yeah, you know, there were always these major threats to the world or the galaxy, but in some cases, not only were they threats, but they truly did have a lasting imprint. There was a footprint left behind on these universes, and part of what I would like to explore, and I don't think, you know, 110 months ago when this one came to me. This is one that it's not that it's much maligned or anything. It just happened to get bumped.
Yes.
Other things drew our favor more than this particular episode, and it wasn't anything that was so timely that we had to get to it. But it occurred to me, actually literally practically just going into this, that one of the things that we see a lot of times in comics is these earth-shattering events that leave no lasting impact.
No, none.
There is no editorial mandate to, oh, by the way, there should always be a big gaping hole, you know, outside the city, or
right,
you know, any number of things. They just go away. Once the story's done, you're no longer troubled by you know, the Midgard serpent coming and wreaking havoc, or, you know, Galactus battling, or worse yet, you know, a character like Terminus in the Fantastic Four, who wrote his name in crayon, or actually in energy plasma vault, across the Midwest. You know, these are things that people should still be bitching about.
Right.
If not, well, I mean, you know, taking in earnest, and it becomes a bit of what I would call Captain Marvel syndrome.
It is, yeah. Oh, and, you mean, okay, yeah.
And in a less earth-shattering way, Captain Marvel syndrome comes from the death of Captain Marvel, which was one of the earliest, if not the first, graphic novel. It was a story too big for one comic book, too big for any title, and God knows no one wanted to bring down Avengers readers by, you know, covering the storyline of one of their own, croaking it from cancer, even though apparently we tended to forget he wasn't human.
But it speaks directly to what you were saying, because you've spoke to it on the show before. Where,
yes, exactly, that, you know, everybody gangs up to cure cancer as long as somebody important enough, and apparently Kree cancer is a hell of a lot easier to go up to bat with than human cancer, and that may be why they just never spoke of it again. You know, if you can't cure Kree cancer, what hope do you have to cure human cancer?
Yeah.
Apparently.
But the thing about that is, you know, you haven't heard any mention of that, really. It didn't shatter. It didn't cause the repercussions that after it was over, it just went away and nobody talked about it.
There were no ripples.
Right. There wasn't even the wind didn't blow across the pond after that.
It just, you know, it was almost like one of these dirty family secrets that we will never speak of again. Yet there's no reason for that.
Right. No.
Other than sort of an editorial laziness. A desire not to have, you know, one writer's storyline intrude on everyone else's forever.
So are there any other ones that you can think of off the top of your head that that really were supposed to do something that didn't?
I think there was like a – DC had their invasion.
Yes, yes.
It's another example of, you know, mass destruction. Everybody showed up for that one. It was like, you know, it was like the swimming pool in Caddyshack all the undesirables came and hopped in the pool all at once. And, you know, the Earth was, as I recall, brought very much to its knees. And I think there were a few heroes, inconsequential heroes that died.
Right.
There was a member of the new Doom Patrol. This is before Doom Patrol, went funk-ass on us. This is when they were still attempting to be, a proper group.
They went all incense and peppermints on us there for a little bit.
Yeah, they went into whatever the hell realm HR Puffin stuff.
They went into Sid and Marty Croft realm.
Yeah, they went to Lidsville for a while there. How's that for a topper?
Oh. That's definitely the first in a year reference that we've had.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, there have been a ton of them that are supposed to hit and supposed to wreck the world as we know it, that really just have no effect on anything in the end. One of the ones that always got me, because when Grant Morrison started doing the Justice League, the JLA, that we talked about fairly famously in the Gods episode of Hey Kids Comics, where he had set him up as the Greek Gods. When he started running his JLA book, they started, and writers after it, every story arc was this scenario where the world was ending, everything was coming to a close. Nothing was going to be the same ever again.
Yeah,
everything changes. And the one that really got me was, because it was a favorite character of mine, was I think I sent you a little information on this, was the Zariel. The angel, when they brought the angel
in. Oh, yes, I remember Zariel.
And,
Seemed about, it was one of those things, those characters that seemed about as out of place in that realm as, what was it, Dale Gunn? he was just like the JLA's guy.
He's just a general dude.
He's just like a dude that showed up one day. It's like when the Ghostbusters hired Winston Zeddemore. It's like, you know, they were vested. They knew they developed the equipment. They made it happen. And then he was just sort of hired on.
It'd be like giving Snapper Carr a costume.
Yeah. And I'm sure Snapper Carr was like, the hell? He gets full membership? How long was I snapping it for you?
I'm snapping it. Have we talked about Snapper Carr on the show? Okay, full disclosure, I'm on a muscle relaxer right now, so just be prepared for any kind of tangent that could come your way.
Little did we know going into this that Snapper Carr would even ever be invoked.
And little did we know ever doing this show that Snapper Carr would ever be invoked.
That's so true.
But they did a mini-series, because DC was really big on mini-series during this time period as well, like outside mini-series based on the books that they had, because whatever story arc they were running wasn't enough. We're going to introduce another. They did one called Paradise Lost. And I remember Paradise Lost because I really liked the Zariel character, and you know the art was really good in this. I bought them all, and the thing about it was the idea was hell and heavens were unleashing their armies, and they were going to clash on the battlefield that is Earth. It's a trope that's been used many, many times.
Absolutely, well, everybody, it's a handy battlefield.
Right.
A lot of it's more level than most other places that they could have had their war.
And in the book it's depicted, you know, Asmodeus and Neron, was he the DC devil?
Neron. Or...
Yeah, unleash their hordes upon the earth, and, you know, and angels and, you know, the archangels and the demons are fighting and buildings are coming down. And keep in mind, right, people are seeing this. And here's where I wanted – this is the thing that's kind of outside of what we're talking about, is that people are seeing this happen, okay? So after it's over, though, you know, the buildings that were destroyed are of course, back to normal. Any craters in the earth are set. The giant, you know, beams of sun coming through the clouds, and the fact that you can see, you know – heaven's armies amassing in the sky and giant, they're gone now. Everything's gone now. The giant open holes in the earth are gone now. So it all resets. how do you reset the population of the Earth after they've seen the angels and demons fight on,
yeah, exactly.
On Midgar, essentially? Like, and that's the other thing that's never talked about, is how does that affect the population? Because there is a physical geographical part of, you know, a component of this that always gets reset. I would think it would be much harder to write away your entire population of the universe that you built, seeing, you know, the devil and Asmodeus the Argent go at it, you know, with giant swords. And you know, I think he had like a three head that turned. One was a lion and one was a boar, you know, it was a bull. Like, and all of a sudden everybody's back to normal. Like, how?
Yeah, especially, I think part of the problem is it's the same reason that every planet other than Earth has a single government.
Yeah.
Because it's basically an artistic license. It's a writer's out. You know, my biggest complaint about Star Trek was always, you know, you go planet to planet to planet. They all seem to have a world government, and nobody seems to be at all bothered by the fact that, how did we get it so wrong?
Right.
Forever. We were like we're the most backward-ass planet in the universe that we've encountered to date, because not a single one of them doesn't have a world government. And it could be they're just tiny planets. It could be they're like a third, you know, quarter of the size of Earth. They've not enough room to have more than one government. But the reality is that you have to have a writer's out, or you have to go all in with a massive editorial mandate that from here on out, one of the important things that's going to be a recurring theme in the DCU is heaven and hell exist. It's been unequivocally proven. But then that would then lead to further debate. Well, you know, maybe these are just more super beings taking on the mantle of heaven and hell. Maybe they don't really come from heaven and hell. And the debate could rage on from there. But it should always, it should leave its mark. You cannot, like you say, you can't come in and drop a charge and leave, old man. it doesn't work in the greater universe. And if you overthink these things like we do here at Hey Kids Comics.
Well, that's what we do. That's why we have a show, because these are the conversations that we have anyway. We might as well record them and put them out there. I hope that Jason enjoys this episode as much as he did the cat episode. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Jason.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like,
many are the examples of where this goes wrong, and we'll probably be continuing to explore those as we move forward, because there are so many.
Right.
Because it is a very difficult thing to maintain forever. You really, really have a hard time with it. I think the most sustainable and what seemed to be eternal up to a point, and that's been dashed, and we've talked about this often, is the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Right.
Because what it did literally was change everything, because quite by accident, a fun little idea to make sense of what became of the more fanciful characters that just simply didn't work in a modern world. They worked for your father, but not for you.
Right.
And that would be the Golden Age versus your Silver Age characters, because science came in to sweep away magic, for example.
Right.
And
alien technologies. And
science fiction was more fun than magic. You were going from, you know, you're leaving George Powell behind and entering later George Powell, where you're moving from, you know, fighting dragons to escaping the Earth on big rocket sleds. But what do you do with all that? How do you pay tribute to what came before? And that was because there was this rich history that they didn't want to just abandon. And there were so many disparate places that, you know, literally like hitchhikers you picked up along the way.
Right.
Who wind up hanging out and becoming, you know, part of the family. Your Captain Marvels, your Charlton Blue Beetles and Peacemakers and such.
Right.
How do you get all of this to stop having to have some sort of weird Frankenscience or galactic event to get these guys working together? And that's, you have the Crisis on Infinite Earths. And the idea was that this was going to literally change everything. This was going to give you one Superman to rule them all. And you no longer, and you got to explore, if you weren't familiar with the Golden Age, you got to explore characters you never saw before. Like, I didn't realize there was an old geezer Superman with gray hair.
Or,
you know, he was getting the white Nick Fury bonsai trained gray there at the temples, and you've got Robin not dropping the mantle of Robin, even though he's like in his 40s now.
Right, like, just weird.
It was like if there was like one member of Menudo that refused to quit.
He's the Joey Fatone.
Of
the DC world, right? And never let it be said that the next to Watchmen, that Crisis isn't your favorite comic event.
Yeah, I mean, that was really my entree into DC, so it holds a huge place in my heart forever. And the thing about it was it introduced you to everybody, and you went into that with this sort of presupposition that you knew what was going on, and if you didn't, you kind of picked up that, you know, Blue Beetle and Nightshade and The Question and all these guys were always hanging out together, but probably never met Aquaman, because I've got to mention Aquaman. Somebody I worked with today was asking me who my favorite superhero was. Twice today I got to invoke Aquaman, who I pointed out was the Rodney Dangerfield of the Justice League. And the thing about it was, and Captain Marvel I was familiar with, but I was pretty sure wasn't DC.
Right.
And at the time, there was so much written about the Crisis, you're like, okay, that's where these guys came from. And this is pre-internet, kids. You had to go out and like buy an extra magazine. You had to go buy Comics Interview or Comic Age or whatever the hell that other
book. You had to buy a magazine to tell you what magazine you needed to buy to get the story you wanted. Because if you bought Marvel Age, they were going to tell you what was going to be premiere this month.
Yeah, so how great the Secret Wars was.
Oh my God.
But
right.
The thing about it was, the idea was that all of these worlds were going to be destroyed, and they even wrote in one or two that didn't previously exist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was one that was specifically written in that was created solely for the Crisis, where you had this kind of royal family who were the sole superheroes.
Okay.
And you had like some sort of thunder and lightning kind of dad, and the plant power, hyped up poison ivy kind of daughter, and then you had the nuclear-powered Lady Quark.
Okay.
Who became the sole survivor because Pariah decided to be an asshole and steal her away from the, you know, after she had, within short order, she saw her entire family vaporized by this great white nothingness that was taking over.
Right.
This whiteout that happened because liquid paper had recently been... That's like the idea.
Yeah, it's better than the last crisis.
My Desmus mom.
It's better than the last crisis, which was the correction tape crisis.
That's so true.
It's a lot of backspace.
Easier to work with. And again, I have to blame Mike Nesmith's mom for the crisis, for hauling off and inventing liquid paper. A little bit of fun, mucky history there for you.
Did she really?
Nesmith's mom. You can look it up. His Mrs. Nesmith.
I believe her name is Mrs. Nesmith.
For those of us who grew up in the Dallas area, that would be Mrs. Nesmith.
Of the Dallas Nesmiths.
Of the Dallas Nesmiths. She created liquid paper and the Crisis. In my only one of those facts is indeed factual.
She also holds the world record.
Point out that during the run of the Crisis on Infinite Earths, friend of the show, friend of mine forever, and former student of the not Mystic Arts but the Theater Arts, that was the one I was looking for. Steve McCauley was in a play at A&M. That was a Thornton Wilder play that I think was a Pulitzer Prize winner called The Skin of Our Teeth.
Okay.
And part of the plot was the Great White Event.
Really?
And I couldn't help but notice that the timing was such that, you know, we're steeped in the Crisis on Infinite Earths, and here was this this natural disaster called the Great White Event that included, like, all of a sudden things like woolly mammoths being called back into existence. Because in the crisis, there were, like, these time slips when, in an attempt to save what was left of the universe from this destructive force, the monitor merged the few remaining worlds, which were the, like, literally the worlds that already existed that mattered.
Right.
Ironically, one of the worlds that would matter much later, because frankly, it was too cool to die. But, you know, we've talked about death in comics, and one of the best ways to survive being killed is to be too cool to die.
Right, right.
Like Agent Coulson.
build a fan base. That's how you don't die.
And that was true of the crime syndicate.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. The
entire universe was completely wiped out. Every single one of them was shown being called out of existence, being Nesmithed.
I love the fact that being Nesmithed has become...
From now on, if something is vaporized in a white event of any kind, and, called out of existence, if you will, they are being Nesmithed.
Anytime you see a comic panel, which, by the way, happens all the time, where there's a white wipe on the comic panel, that's being Nesmithed.
There was an entire Nesmith issue of Alpha Flight.
There was.
Just Nesmith that whole thing in.
I can't remember. It might have been Vertigo. It might have been IDW did an entire comic graphic novel called Being Nesmithed, I think. It was made into a Kate Beckinsale movie later.
I saw that.
That's a whiteout movie reference for all of you out there. Okay. I felt I needed to explain it because I think me and one other person saw the actual movie. So there you go.
I would like to, speaking of movies, just real quick, is I'd like to do a film festival that is like a spectrum. So you start out with whiteout, then you go to the gray.
Nice.
And you sort of work your way to the color purple.
Wolfsulker.
I'm working like Red Dawn.
Red Dawn, that's good. Blue Lagoon.
Blue Lagoon. Exactly.
Purple Rain.
Or the color purple, either one.
Either one.
How hipster you want to go. So, but, yeah, I think that the thing about it was that, you know, it changed everything up to a point. But the nice thing about the crisis and what was unique about the crisis is it continued to weigh those characters that were at the end of time.
Right.
The Milliways group who fought the Anti-Monitor at the end of the universe and came back were the only ones who remembered the crisis ever happened. And they're the only ones who are like, you know, certain characters from the Golden Age were like, you know, my Superman never existed.
Right.
Superman I worked with for years. It was like, you know, everybody got It's a Wonderful Life out of this thing was Nesmith and Wonderful Life all over the place.
And Jimmy Stewart and every time a bell rings.
Where the hell's Superman?
How did I get on this bridge?
I just see Jay Garrick, the original Flash.
Oh.
Where's Superman?
Oh my God, that's perfect. Was his character based on Jimmy
Stewart?
God.
Well,
okay, we're going to cast the JSA movie with all
Living Dead. It doesn't matter.
All actors from that era, from the 50s and the 40s.
Old Hollywood.
Old Hollywood.
I'm going to cast me a JSA movie right here.
Right.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason. Peace. Pour one out for Jason.
That's right.
Can we talk for a second about one that didn't work? Can we talk?
Absolutely, because I think we've reached the pinnacle. We've come to the top of the mountain, and now we have to go to the bottom, the depths of the canyon, at the bottom of the lowest valley, at the lowest point below sea level.
It's like they set the bar with Crisis, and then everybody gave up trying to hit that bar. They're like, well, there's no way. There's no way we're ever going to hit that bar.
Well, issue limited series, the hell? Who's going to sit for that?
Right.
And then, 25 years later, here's a 52-issue limited series?
It's good God, right? Can we talk a little bit about Heroes Reborn? Can we talk a little bit?
I wish we didn't have to.
I know, but we...
Actually, it is a necessity of this issue.
That was, by the way, the last panel of that, of the onslaught. Because remember, it started with the human centipeding, the mutant centipeding of Charles Xavier's brain into Magneto's body, essentially. That's what started it, and it was too much. So it just destroyed, it Nesmithed the Marvel Universe. And it led to Heroes Reborn, which is an interesting, it's an interesting situation, because what happened with Heroes Reborn was, so they wiped out the Marvel Universe. They set out to remake the Marvel Universe in Heroes Reborn. So they created this whole thing where Captain America with, you know, the hot new artist teams. You had, you know, Jim Lee, and you had Rob Liefeld, and you had, you know, all these, whoever was popular was relaunching these books at one. And you had, you know, Captain America 1, which just, it was horrifying. The Captain America became this, you know, roided, you know, freak for like a Total Recall extra. And and Fantastic Four was this hyper stylized giant, you know, the thing was like, you know, just like a, like where James Franco had to cut his arm off of in 127 hours. And, you know, so it was just, but it went on for, I think, a year, and then they had to stop that because it was just so, it just didn't work. So yes. they had to then reboot again their universe against
this one changes everything.
Twice.
That changed everything.
Right. So how bad was it that they had to, and the only way that they could come back from the Heroes Reborn world was through the Tower of Babylon, the Rosetta Stone, the Flash of the Marvel Universe, that being Franklin Richards. Because
yes, Franklin was a handy character to have around.
Right.
Because, what is it, Proteus was gone.
Right,
so
right.
You had to have a fallback, you know, it's important to do that.
It's because I want to talk a little bit about the Franklin Richards and the Flashes of the comic world, because the Flash is one of those guys that whenever you need a reboot, whenever you need an extinction level event within your universe, you go to the Flash, because it was Crisis, the other Crisis, Fiesta Taco Crisis, New 52 Crisis, Flashpoint, which at least he finally got top billing in that for sacrificing himself for the universe. But why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think they keep going back to the same well to you know, on both sides of the aisle, you get these weirdo like Scarlet Witch in the House of M.
The House of M had popped in my head.
Go for it.
That was one of those where, I mean, that one you had sort of the built-in, well, we're going to do this thing, but, you know, we all know it's not going to last.
Right.
This thing had this, you knew it couldn't go on, and with good reason. And ultimately what you had was a situation that was untenable. It was just a pointless romp. And from the outset, you don't care about any of the things that are happening, because they're not going to have, it's going to have even less of a footprint. You know, this thing is going to so cover its tracks, because it's going to exist as long as it needs to tell its story, and then it will be like it never happened.
Right.
And the entire universe is like those that fought at the end of time. So, you know, you wind up with this thing that's pointless, and you, at least for me personally, when I tried to choke it down, it didn't speak to me at all, because I knew none of it meant anything.
Yeah, that's
and it was just trying too hard to, oh, looky, everybody has superpowers because they're all mutants. And then it did, like, you know, it was also gouging me with one of these things that somewhere along the line, Namor the Submariner got retconned as being the first mutant.
Oh, God, right.
And it just like, okay, what part of the fact that he's half human, half Atlantean? It's, again, it's like, why are we fighting so hard to fight Kree cancer? Why do we stop remembering?
Exactly.
what these characters are when it's convenient.
Would it be so bad? Would it be such, you know, such an apotheosis to remember our history, to embrace what's come before? And comics have a really bad time doing that. And that's why, speaking of extinction level events, that's why Kingdom Come was so amazing.
And I think that's also why DC had the foresight to couch that in the context of Elseworlds.
Right.
They are allowing little fits and starts, they're allowing pieces of that to work their way into the greater DC universe. You know, Magog would go on to appear. You're seeing things like Starman as he appears in that. So you're seeing hints that say this is possible.
Right. But we're not writing.
Yeah, we're not writing toward this, but we're giving you some pieces of how, where this could have come from. How do you get to this place? Well, within the greater DCU, here's some of the pieces that could have led to that, but ultimately don't necessarily have to.
Right.
And, you know, that's where I think the greatest strength of the Kingdom Come is that there is that built-in out, that this is not going to have any great impact because, number one, it takes place in the future, and, number two, it may not be really where we're headed.
Right, but what we're going to do is continue, if things, you know, it was that idea, and I think that they kind of wrote it out with the New 52, which is unfortunate, because it was really cool that the idea, that you got this idea that as, you know, if you continue on this road, if the DC universe continues on the road that it's on, it all, you know, this particular road leads to Kingdom Come.
Yes.
And you started to see that happen. You know, and even the overarching, you know, mythos, the kind of the palpable air of you know, the younger generation coming up with, you know, the ideas that they have, you know, versus the ideas of the old guard, was starting to transpire, and it was really cool to watch that go down.
Yes.
I kind of want to talk, because we're about at the halfway mark.
Yeah.
I kind of want to talk at this point about the things that are coming up in the comics as far as extinction, you know, level events, so world-ending events go. And there's two big ones, of course, Marvel and DC. Not to let one outdo the other. DC came out with they took the muzzle off of off of Grant Morrison and let him go crazy, which is always a dangerous idea. But what he did with that is he created this comic called Multiversity. And Multiversity,
oh, yes,
are these ideas that all these other worlds so they've already are re-retcon and whatever they're doing with the New 52, that all these worlds exist, and the Last Monitor is still out there. And he's watching over all of these worlds that you know, he's kind of this forgotten, you know, lighthouse keeper, watching over all these worlds, and there's a force of multiverse police that are these superheroes from all these other, you know, universes, all these other worlds that are all coming together to try to fight this. But he's got all these great ideas, like the one that I forgot to bring to you at the Christmas party. Crap, was the Pax Americana, where they took the Carlton characters. They took your Blue Beetle, your Question, your what was the guy's name that you just said not too long
ago? Oh, Peacemaker.
Peacemaker, and they wrote it as if it were, you know, they kind of gave it the Watchmen treatment of the original characters that the Watchmen were based on.
Yeah,
and it was brilliant. But it's all culminating in this thing called the Convergence, where they're going to jump from world to world, and heroes are going to jump from world to world. And there is a release, by the way, from DC at the same time of the comic book, because the whole thing is based on this one monitor that lives on our Earth.
Okay.
Earth, whatever it is.
Earth Prime, as it used to be,
yeah,
until Earth's, that got destroyed.
Earth 6 something.
Oh, yes. I'm a little thrown by that, because there's, like, Marvel and DC now have their various when you look anything up, which, you know, often when we're doing our research for these shows, and sometimes it doesn't always seem that way, but we do some research for this.
Right.
But, you know, I'll look up a character and be like, you know, Marvel Earth 616. Like, when did that even become a thing? I fell out of comics long enough for somebody to have to convolute it even worse than it already was.
Right.
By trying to unconvolute it.
And that's where the Monitor lives, and he has a comic book that's appearing in all of the other comic books, an actual, you know, people comic, a human comic book that is linked to all these other worlds that in the, you know, the Captain Atom, Dr. Manhattan analog was reading, and all the, you know, and it appears in all of these books. I believe in the one with Dr. Fate, where that was like a World War II kind of a Black Hawks version, he had it in his, you know, in his Sanctum Sanctorum, whatever you
call it. Okay, yeah.
So what they're doing with this is they're redefining their universe again after, what, 3 years of – now it's been 3 years, I think, to date, to the month of the launch of the New 52. So they're getting ready to – I don't think they're going to wipe the slate clean, but it's their first big world ender.
Yeah.
DC side. And not to be outdone, Marvel's bringing about probably the weirdest thing that I've seen Marvel do in a really long time, and that is relaunching the Secret Wars, which I think that deserves a little conversation about the Secret Wars.
Absolutely, yeah. To take a look back at Secret Wars, there was always this sort of sense of fierce competition between Marvel and DC.
Yes.
And at times, it really... this kind of a syndrome you see in Hollywood a lot, and not as much nowadays as you used to, but there was a time where you saw this a lot, and that was, you know, literally where you would have a bunch of different movies come out roughly the same time that all seemed kind of similarly themed. And you often left wondering, well, which came first? You know, who was ripping who off? A great example was one summer, I think it was, when Cameron's The Abyss came out.
Mm-hmm.
And simultaneously, you also had Leviathan and Deep Star 6. You know, how far away were we from a, you know, C-Lab 2020 movie at that point? Because everything was underwater.
Right.
Or so it seems.
So it's... Nothing gets out of the water.
That's right. You know, M. Night Shyamalan was a late comer to the party with the late Lady in the Water at that point.
Well, you know, it's M. Night Shyamalan. What are you going to do?
Yeah. What indeed are you going to do? And that, of course, was something intruding from some of my research there.
And that's okay. We don't stand on ceremony.
That's just proof that we were researching, because sometimes some damn commercial or something pops up in the middle of what you're looking at.
Right. The Secret Worlds was a train wreck. We've talked about how much of a train wreck it was due to the fact...
Supposedly, you know, the Secret War itself, which is orchestrated by some being known as the Beyonder.
Right.
And it was greatly parodied in a little indie back in the days of the indie boom, Secret Doors, in which this character known as the Over Yonder... had basically called all the heroes together for a game show. And, yeah, they were like, well, you know, because I come from over there, over yonder. And it was a really fun, brilliant thing that I went to great pains to track a copy down because it was very hard to find. But, you know, the idea was that the Beyonder apparently constructed a calico patchwork world.
Okay.
Out of, let's call it 700,000 square foot chunks of other planets. I guess there would be some sort of diversity of terrain and stuff upon which the combatants might do battle. And, you know, part of the problem is that you run into a character like Spider-Woman, who's supposedly from Earth. And that begged the question is, why did we not go home from the Secret Wars to find a big chunk of Earth missing?
Exactly. Exactly. Because the battle world still has to exist, right? Like, out there somewhere, yeah. Wherever Beyonder decided to drag it off to.
And it wasn't like they ever had any coverage of it, you know, him putting everything back. I think at the end they were all just sort of sent along their way. And
they were relieved. They were relieved it was over, much like we were. They were all relieved that it was no longer.
I mean, yeah, who couldn't have been more that, happy?
That impish cherubic image of Dr. Doom from the cover of the issue 12 of the Secret Wars just is burned indelibly into my brain. Just looking like
there will never be an escape from that.
Looking like the cover of a lotion bottle in armor. I don't. It's horrifying. But yeah, it was awful, and it was ill conceived, and it was ill timed, and it just was bad. It was a bad attempt at a money grab based on the success of Crisis, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they looked jealously at what the Crisis was, and the Crisis came out of a meticulous research done on the part of somebody hired to try to research the entire history of the DCU.
Right.
And the practical offshoot for Marvel was, let's do a big old thing, too. And, you know, there are some points in Crisis where I feel that there's some stilted dialogue.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Secret Wars was chock full of Jim Shooter style stilted dialogue. So absolute worst was, you know, rather than imagining that you pretty much, I mean, there were characters you never heard of in your life in Crisis. And if you walk into it and here's Commandy or Anthro or Batlash and Cinnamon from the Old West,
right?
You pretty much walk into it and say, oh, that must be Batlash and Cinnamon because that's what they called each other.
Right,
and
that's
it's
their
okay.
name.
Obviously, they're from the Untamed West, where the most iconic characters in the Marvel Universe that everyone knows. They have the thing introducing him like nobody, like they don't even know each other. And then for him to introduce his colleague, Reed Richards, as, you know, this guy over here is Mr. Fantastic, if you can believe that.
What
kind of non, as Steve put it in a letter to me, what kind of non-characterization is that?
Yeah, right. What kind of glossed over, if you can believe that? Good God. But so much in the same vein as Crisis and the Secret Wars, the original Secret Wars, everything old is new again, and we're getting a revamp of that because as DC gets ready to launch Convergence, Marvel announces a new Secret Wars. And the new Secret Wars essentially takes a new battle world, which
it's the new Secret Wars, same as the old Secret Wars.
Yeah, kind of. There are 41, I guess, different zones in the battle world, ranging from Apocalypse's domain to the 2099 world to Mutopia to, you know, Kunlun, the land of
Iron
Fist.
Oh, I see. So this world is sort of made up of all of the other incarnations of different things in the Marvel Universe in much the same way that the Crisis just sort of visits each one in its own.
Right.
You know, they're not having to be, like, cobbled together piecemeal.
Right. But they also have, like, the 2099 world and the Monarchy from the House of M series and, you know, Manhattan from two different Earths, our Earth and then another Earth, and the Utopolis, which is the I believe is the Ultron from the Age of Ultron. So they're so they're taking all of their different worlds and combining them into one world in order to tell a story, which sounds vaguely like the Convergence thing that's happening at DC at the same time, where they're going to jump from world to world in all their different various forms to solve a great mystery. So once again, from my big leather recliner, what it looks like is the Secret Wars is being shoehorned into the Marvel Universe to create, you know, to counteract what DC is doing, probably well thought out because Grant Morrison is involved.
Yes, well, yeah.
Right.
That at least gives you some hope. His involvement and a complete and total abject lack of involvement on the part of Jim Shooter.
Right, but Bendis could be, you know, in the same. This could be. I will go on record to say if this is what I think it's going to be. Okay, this could be the Shooter moment for Bendis. This could be the Quesada Bendis Shooter moment.
So this could be like Bendis like Shooter, kind of like Bend it like Beckham.
I can't even. I don't even know how to begin to comment on what you just said because
I don't either. And I said it.
It's horrifying and amazing at the same time. I'm astounded by that. But and at the same time, so happy that you made that joke. But what? Okay. So I got to ask this as we're coming up on the last quarter of the show. Of everything that you've seen in the vast, you know, and you've been reading comic books at least as long as I have. So let's say, you know, we've been reading comics for...
Yeah, by volume. I mean, I stopped for many years, and that allowed you to catch up.
Mm-hmm. So 30-odd years of comics.
Yeah.
60 years of comic reading between us. We've seen a lot of world-ending events in our time. We've seen from, like you said, from the White Event in the New Universe... to Flashpoint. We've seen, you know, from anything and everything you can imagine. We've seen time bullets. We've seen Batman travel, you know, forward through time. We've seen it all. Is there anything that you haven't seen that you want to see?
That's an interesting question. I think something I would like to see that you rarely see come out of Marvel and DC. It's the sort of thing you see come out of the indies, and oftentimes, you know, they don't even really work out. You know, they don't have that kind of lasting... It's the sort of thing you have to find the right kind of people to go and tell folks. You know, I was at the comic shop just last night. I kind of overheard a conversation where one of the employees was, you know, recommending something. And one of the things that impressed me is he asked a very vitally important question. What have you read?
Yes. Yes.
Because that to me says, I'm not going to recommend what I like. I'm going to make an informed recommendation.
Right.
Based on your experience. And, you know, because... I could recommend a number of things all day long, but if that isn't in your wheelhouse, you know, there have been things that have been handed to me over the years, and I'm sort of like, sometimes I'll pick them up. I, to this day, still have copies of somebody who I may never be able to track down again. Their four volumes of Berserk, a manga
wow.
that I will never read. And I just cannot begin to try to read it. But, you know, what I would like to see is something akin to what Watchmen was, and that is something that, you know, even if it had, you know, that one, you've got the backstories, you know, we know that it started as something else.
Right.
But the thing about it is, you have to, I'd like to see something original come out, and I think Marvel and DC both did this very well, during one of their Me Too periods, in which they Me Too'd each other without doing anything remotely the same. And that was with Marvel's being followed with Kingdom Come. The two of those things couldn't be more different.
Right.
Yet, they both have the same flavor. They're both the same species. They just evolved into different... They're like, you know, Galapagos finches.
Wow.
That, you know, each one of them is a
I love doing shows with you. I really do.
You get a natural history lesson about every second or third episode. And, you know, that's one of those things where I really long to see something that isn't a cash grab, except in so much as it's accidentally a cash grab. I mean, good Lord, the Watchmen. has got to have, like, you know, is far and away the highest earning comic creation in the history of history.
Right.
Nothing will ever touch it. And, you know, granted, when the movie was coming out, that boosted, you know, it's like a half billion copies were sold inside a week. And, you know, they couldn't print it fast enough. I think they had to, like, you know, open out of business printing facilities to temporarily. It was like, you know, gearing up for war. They, you know, auto manufacturers shut down and went into printing just to meet the demand.
You had to buy bonds. It was crazy. Yeah,
exactly. It was a heady period in American history. But, you know, that became a massive cash cow, but it was never intended. And I think that's what I miss, is the unintentional, you know, jumping, taking a chance with something that isn't obvious.
Right, right. Taking a risk on something new. And see, I would go one step further. I agree. Take a risk on something new. But, and I think you said it, I think you've said it in the past, where, you know, when you were doing your universe, your comic universe that you were creating, when something happens, like you said, have it have a lasting effect. Make it an editorial mandate starting from the beginning that you know, if you destroy a mountain, if you remove a piece of earth, if you move an ocean into the middle of Manhattan, it stays there. Don't hit a reset button.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, when real world events happen, like, you know, nobody's still going to be drawing the Twin Towers in New York when they have Spider-Man or Thor or whoever come cruising by. But, you know, why are those same things not occurring when fictional major events happen?
Right, right.
And, you know, I mean, there are certain things like, you know, I think the original Baxter Building got destroyed or greatly changed and became Four Freedoms Plaza. And so, you know, that aspect of the fictional skyline changed accordingly. But again, there is still nobody's gone out and tried to do anything to, you know, send in earth movers to level the signature, Slarda Bart Fast signature that Terminus left.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have any indication that these things ever happened. And, you know, that's
So that's my thought, is just do something that sticks. You know, do something that has a lasting repercussion.
Absolutely. In the context of this show, I would love to see that. I'd love to see that come back. Because, like I said, the crisis had, you know, people were still talking about it within the comics. Those who were there, it still bothered them. Or, you know, there was something there.
Right.
And then nothing.
Right. And then you pretend it didn't exist. So let's wrap it up. We've talked about a lot of world-ending events today.
Absolutely. I think we successfully. I'm going to throw this in just because I know you were waiting for it to happen.
Oh man.
And we did not mention the pit.
It's
the entire city of Pittsburgh was destroyed and replaced with a giant ironic pit. That was then given an extra tea to invoke Pittsburgh, and apparently was filled with pit juice.
It was filled with pit. It was
which was registered trademark of Marvel Comics.
Yeah, you can't mess with pit juice.
That's right.
It,
I was going to be. I actually was trying to launch a new JCU energy drink.
Were you?
And Marvel blocked me, even though the new universe hasn't been relevant. And I'm curious: is the new universe part of the new Secret Wars?
You know, what's funny is I don't think it is.
That's a shame.
It's a real shame.
I miss those plucky kids from MIT in, what the hell? The hell was the name of that stupid book? With they had their stupid Baymax Big Hero 6 robot. And they,
it's not coming to me. Now I've got to look it up.
All I've got is Kickers Incorporated stuff.
It's all I got. Star Brand, and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't think it is, which is a really unfortunate thing, because that would be really fun, especially after, if you watch the live show, they brought back Star Brand in the Avengers.
Yeah. How the hell do you get off with that, and then you ignore the that world that was supposed to be the very world in which we all live. That was their Earth Prime.
Right, right. That was their attempt at making it a, you know, making it real, a real, real world, a grittier, real thing.
Keeping it real.
Keep it. Psi-Force. Was it Psi-Force? It wasn't
Psi-Force. No. Psi-Force was not.
Oh, it was Spitfire and the Troubleshooter.
Spitfire and the Troubleshooter. And it was like somebody in the somebodies. And I was pretty sure it wasn't like Morris Day and the Knights. That was...
Morris Day and the Knights! Cool! It's superhero that just... He has another superhero that's there just to hold a mirror for him. It's great.
A little bit softer now. Softer now. A little bit softer now. A little bit louder now.
Damn it. Damn it.
Holy shit, it's Morris Day and the Knights. He loves us.
Oh my god. All right. Why don't you plug us up, Cole?
All right. Well, of course, this has been another fine production of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. Yeah, we're back from vacation, baby.
Yeah, we are.
You can find Andrew and I, in fact, tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
11:30 to 12:30, live at DeepElemOnAir.com. Rancor Pit was was back on Sunday, but Hey Kids Comics Live will be back again a week later than our normal schedule because the holidays just keep wrecking us. But we are having our Hey Kids Comics Live Christmas Wish Book. We're going to help you figure out things that would be great gifts for the comic fan on your list, your Christmas
That's
list.
Right.
We're going to be having special guests for the show. We have a couple of comic book retailers, as a matter of fact. I believe we're going to have Kenneth Denson from Red Pegasus Comics in Dallas and James Pickering, the owner of A Galaxy Called Dallas in Garland. So we
That's
will
awesome.
Have actual live comic retailers. We've taken them out of their natural habitat. We're going to catch and release. Don't worry, they will be released back into the wild. And they're going to tell you about some of the things they would recommend. We're going to tell you about some of the things you would recommend. And we encourage you, check out the number on the screen. Give us a call and say, hey, you know, here's some things I would recommend. Even if it's just a subtle way of telling your friends and relatives, why don't you watch this show that I called in on? So you'll have a clue what I want for Christmas.
Right.
Right. We're just doing our part to help you out. So check us out tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at DeepElemOnAir.com with ourselves, Jansen Ray, our incredible producer. You can write to us, and please do write to us, at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can find our tweets from whenever I get around to it on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. And coming up in March, mark your calendar, we will be back. The JCU will have a tremendous presence. Our friends in the United States of Geekdom will have a tremendous presence. A lot of other people that you've heard on this show or heard
right.
about on the show or
friends of the show and
be all over the map at AllCon. You can check it out at ALL-CON.org. That's in mid-March. You can find out about that and all kinds of other shows in Texas on the soon-to-be-updated again. Convention Awareness Project at www.cap-tx.info. The newly revamped, thank you, Todd, easier to remember, easier to find address for Convention Awareness Project Texas. And we do also have the Jedi Cole Universe YouTube page, and we're going to be starting to put a little bit more together for that pretty soon.
That's right. So I'm excited about Saturday.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I want to talk about. I'm still waiting on my Birdman bust. I don't know why they dropped the ball on that.
They kind of missed the boat. I think NECA needs to do a, you know, they've got that Batman.
Yeah.
You know, probably talk about on the show that looks like it's from the old...
from the 89 movie? Yeah.
Yeah, from the 89 video game.
Oh, yes.
They need to do, just for the hell of it, what the Birdman video game, version of Birdman would look like. But yeah, I'm surprised no one jumped on that as a marketing thing. If nothing else, I'm going to say Funko, we need a reaction.
Oh my God, the whole Birdman cast.
Yeah, we see the whole damn cast. Just do everybody, and then maybe like a Birdman Keenan two-pack.
That would be so awesome. That would be so amazing. All right, guys.
And maybe like packaging where Birdman is like kind of always constantly looking over his shoulder.
Over his shoulder, talking in the Birdman.
Place smells like balls.
Let's give them what they want.
Put them in four.
Yeah, that's a three-pack of characters.
There you go.
It needs to be done. All right, guys. So join us next week. We got another show coming up, brand new, brand spanking. Saturday, you can find us at deepelemonair.com. As always, all the awesome shows on JCU. Go see them. Other than that, I think that's all we got for tonight. Why don't you say goodnight, Cole?
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. And Nesmith White.